This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the unfolding events in Afghanistan are troubling. They're really, really sad. The bomb, suicide bomb, in fact, there were two bombs that exploded last night, has claimed the lives of 103 people, most of them Afghans, some of them children, and at least 13 US soldiers dead and many seriously injured. The misguided and inefficient drawdown of people and troops from Afghanistan is turning into a debacle of historic dimensions. People earlier in this crisis likened what they were seeing to the United States leaving Saigon all those years ago with helicopters on the roof of their embassy and people clambering to get on. Very vivid pictures. But what's happening in Afghanistan as we talk is far worse in many people's view. The Brits have said that they're going today and that anyone who isn't in the airport will have to stay behind, which led Tom Tugendhat, the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the Westminster Parliament, a former veteran, to say this morning that Britain may face the biggest hostage crisis in its history. Among those hostages would be the person who acted for Tugendhat when he did service in Afghanistan, who has been abandoned, as indeed have many Americans as well. This has turned into the greatest embarrassment and debacle, I think everyone agrees, in recent history for the Western powers. It is worth noting that this on its face was a NATO mission, because George Bush, George W. Bush that is, and Tony Blair, when they decided to go into Afghanistan in 2001, needed political cover, and their European allies in NATO provided that. But essentially, this is a matter for the United States of America and for the British, and they have made a very bad job of it. We're joined now from London by Chris Johns. Chris, of course, former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland, now commentator. And he has his own podcast, The Other Hand, which he does with Jim Power, another brilliant economist who is a contributor to The Stand. Chris, thank you very much for joining us. The latest news I just read you there was Tom Tugendhat's view. He is the person who made such a powerful speech at the House of Commons special gathering last Wednesday to discuss this crisis, who is a former soldier who served in Afghanistan and is now the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. You once memorably said that Boris Johnson's government and its cabinet in particular consisted of right-wing hacks, journalists and after-dinner speakers. Perhaps, Chris, that's why Tom Tugendhat isn't in the cabinet. He is a man of courage and ability. What we're seeing now, I cannot remember in terms of humiliation in my lifetime, the West being so exposed and its weaknesses there for all to see, notably terrorists. And there is a new terrorist group responsible for this bombing in Afghanistan last evening. That's ISIS-K. What is the mood in Britain this morning?
It's one of horror, obviously, but also of resignation. This is a faraway place that an awful lot of people know nothing of. And so there is a sense of bewilderment, I suspect, certainly amongst the people I've been speaking with as to what's going on. A lot of people ask me what I think about Joe Biden's role in this, the extent to which Britain has been kowtowing or just beholden to whatever the Americans do. The press, which perhaps is a reflection of the mood, takes two different tacks today. The tabloids are going for Joe Biden in a big way. And I think that that is certainly one legitimate avenue of criticism. And I suspect many people would share that. But I also have a suspicion that they're trying to deflect from what one or two of the better quality papers, like the FT, for example, are asking questions about global Britain. And what does this actually mean? Was global Britain just another one of Boris Johnson's slogans and as superficial and meaningless as all the rest? And the tabloids are certainly trying to deflect from that. Tugendhat is an example, I think, of that opposition to depth, to integrity, to attention to detail, all of the things that we know Johnson and his cabinet are not fond of. The superficiality is extraordinary and has been revealed, I think, by this, and not just this, but particularly by this crisis. Tugendhat was elected by his fellow MPs, full of respect for his experience, for his integrity, and his intellectual depth.
Yes.
And as you say, Boris Johnson has made a point of not putting him, or indeed anybody like him, in the cabinet. When you put him up against people like Gavin Williamson, Priti Patel, Dominic Raab even.
Matt Hancock. Don't forget Matt Hancock.
Well, he's no longer in the cabinet, Eamon, so no. Boris Johnson has seen him off now as well. So I think, yes, it's one of horror, it's one of resignation. I think that amongst people that sort of follow the Westminster scene, there is a sense that this is the greatest foreign policy crisis since Suez. That's a cliched term that's used often when Britain falls into crisis, but I think in this particular case, it's absolutely appropriate. This is merely the beginning of a new phase in the Afghanistan war, I suspect, rather than the end of something. There is going to be a refugee crisis. As you said, others have said, there's going to be a hostage crisis potentially, because obviously these people that have been left stranded are vulnerable to being taken hostage by any one of a number of groups. And the use of Afghanistan itself as a terrorist platform for attacks on the West, that obviously is a concern. But as I say, the temptation, I think, that, and it may be superficial, but the temptation is to lay all of the blame, and I think Britons typically are doing this, on Joe Biden rather than the Johnson government. The more profound questions about what it means for global Britain are only being asked quietly today. They're not front and centre.
Well, I would say, Chris, that the blame should be laid rightly at the door of George W. Bush and of former Prime Minister Tony Blair. This, remember, mission to go into Afghanistan as part of the war on terror was announced and executed in 2001, shortly after 9/11, which was an atrocity that killed almost 3,000 Americans. And Bush and Blair decided they would go into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden and to prevent Afghanistan being used as a base for terrorists. In the case of bin Laden and 9/11, Al-Qaeda were the terrorist group involved. The mission to get bin Laden ended in 2011 when he was got. He was got in East Pakistan, actually, not in Afghanistan. The war on terror part of it and the idea that Afghanistan could be neutralized as a safe haven for terrorists, it lies in shreds, because last night there was a grotesque act of terrorism, and this new terrorist group, ISIS-K, can clearly act with impunity in Kabul airport.
Yes, and there are questions about various networks in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Questions, as I'm sure you've seen, are being asked of something called the Haqqani Network, which is very Pakistan-based. More generally, one of the mysteries of the 20-year occupation was the silence that the Americans had over the way in which the Pakistanis and their intelligence service in particular facilitated various terror groups, not least the Taliban itself, in terms of giving them safe harbor and all the rest of it. One of the theories that I've seen that looks credible, this has been posited by David Frum. I know it's somebody you know as a...
He was Bush's speechwriter.
Yeah, David Frum says, the reason why they've kept silent about Pakistan's role in all of this for 20 years is that they needed Pakistan as a land bridge to supply for supply lines for their forces in Afghanistan. And Frum thinks that now that that land bridge is no longer needed because they don't no longer need have any troops there to supply, that attention might well turn, the Americans' attention might well turn to what Pakistan has been up to, both over the last 20 years and indeed more recently. You mentioned Blair. Now, one of the I think, more awful things about all of this is the way Tony Blair does have this horrible tendency to rewrite history.
Yes.
He's been out on the airwaves in various forms over the last couple of weeks, sounding very erudite, as he always does, very knowledgeable, which he is, but rewriting history. They went into Afghanistan to eradicate al-Qaeda, and this was widely supported by the British and American, and indeed other public, other citizens of other countries that were part of the NATO effort. Eliminating the group that had done 9/11 seems to be a fairly obvious thing to do. At the time they went in, there was no suggestion of nation building, state building, or regime change or anything like that. This was all about eliminating al-Qaeda and its ability to wage war on the West. All of this stuff about nation building and state building came afterwards. And Blair says that they went in to do the nation and state building thing. They didn't. That's him rewriting history. And he has a horrible tendency to do this.
Yes.
And frankly, I think most of us would rather he stayed off the stage rather than on it. This backward-looking self-justification of what happened. They were right to go in, but certainly once they were in and what they did subsequently has all led to the disaster that we see on our screens at the moment.
Yes, and one of the phrases used, Blair wrote a piece for the Daily Mail, I believe, last week, in which he described, by implication, Joe Biden as an imbecile. He said it was an imbecilic idea, this evacuation, and the, as you say, the self-justification, but also Blair is putting into words what many people, including Donald Trump, was putting about, that Biden wasn't up to the job. And to get the history accurately, it was Donald Trump who engaged with the Taliban in 2018 in Doha, in Qatar, in talks that led to this deadline. It was Trump agreed to a deadline of all Americans and all NATO forces out of Afghanistan by May of this year. Biden extended that to the end of August. But the execution of that has been abysmal. It has also emerged this morning, Chris, that this is hard to believe, but this is what the Americans have done. They gave the Taliban a list of people who had helped them, Afghans, and who they wanted to get out. These are the very people who are hiding from the Taliban for fear of a reprisal, and that will come in the form of death. It's an unbelievable mess, but Britain is up to its neck in this fiasco. I want to ask you about the House of Commons recall last Wednesday, and Tom Tugendhat made a very powerful speech in which he said he mourned for the Britons who gave their lives. And indeed, in the case of one man who was on television last week, both his legs in the cause that Britain was allegedly engaged in. And Tugendhat ended his speech by saying, you may say this is not a defeat, which Johnson did in his rather feeble speech. He said, but it damn well feels like it at this moment. It is a massive defeat for the West, isn't it? And for NATO and for the Anglo-American alliance.
as you say, it's multiple defeats, and I'll come back to that in a second. But just to pick up on your earlier point, the first half of your comment stroke question, in terms of names being given to the Taliban, the London Times this morning is reporting that its own journalists have been wandering around the British Embassy compound and have found pieces of paper scattered on the ground with names of Afghan employees of the British Embassy that are still in Kabul. So it's happening on multiple fronts. The Taliban clearly have access to these kinds of people, and that will lead, one fears, to further tragedy. The defeats are on several fronts, but of course, if you are leaving in this way, in this Saigon-esque type way, then that is a military defeat, at least. We can talk about the political and other consequences of that military defeat, but I don't see how you could label it in any other way. This is a full-on retreat from Kabul. It's not the first that the British have been involved in. If you can read a book about the retreat from Kabul in the 19th century, and it was as horrific as this one. I think that the last British contingent out of Kabul back then was almost completely wiped out, except for the doctor, who made it on foot into what would then have been India, but is now Pakistan. And extraordinary. So that the Afghans have seen off the British in the 19th century, the Russians in the 20th century, and now the Americans principally, but also the British again in the 21st century. So ignorance of history has certainly played a part in all of this. The best politician that is not in the House of Commons is a chap called Rory Stewart, who knows a lot about Afghanistan. We think he's an ex-spook. He's certainly an ex-diplomat who served time in Afghanistan. He famously wrote a book about walking across Afghanistan a few years ago and has made some extraordinary speeches and written some terrific articles about all of this. And he's hammered away at the simple point that America has hundreds of thousands of troops stationed all over the world. They're not withdrawing from anywhere. They had 2,500 in Afghanistan. The decision to simply let them stay would have been an easier one to have made and wouldn't have led to this debacle. There was a long article in the New York Times yesterday by a well-known commentator called Ezra Klein, who asked the question, well, what was the alternative? And it was a long-form piece of journalism. And not once did he consider the possibility, just leave those 2,500 troops supported by air power there. There seems to be a great forgetting going on. Journalists are being very poor in all of this. And one aspect of the imbecilic comment that Tony Blair has made that you referenced there, first of all, it was classic Blair. Yes. He didn't call Biden an imbecile, but because Blair is so good at PR, he understands and indeed manipulates the media so well. He knew exactly what headlines that would generate. So again, I think that was an attempt to deflect blame from Blair to Biden. But again, the journalists don't report it properly. Biden in 1975 argued publicly that America had no ethical, moral, or other reason to evacuate refugees from Vietnam as he was getting out. So that and lots of other things that Biden has done throughout his history as a politician are entirely consistent with what Biden has done. Yes. He is not an interventionist. He is definitely more Trump-like than perhaps people liked to believe. But this is not a new Joe Biden. This is not an imbecilic Joe Biden who's suddenly gone gaga, if that's the interpretation that Blair and others want to put on this. This is entirely with 40 years of Joe Biden's attitudes towards foreign policy.
Yeah, and just to confirm that, Chris, when he was Obama's vice president in 2010, Joe Biden argued strongly and disagreed strongly with the Obama administration's decision to stay in Afghanistan, particularly after bin Laden was got. But you're absolutely right to point to the fact that Biden is not doing anything that isn't consistent with his long-held views. What is interesting is the other point you made about the presence of troops in Afghanistan. The ambassador, Obama's ambassador to Afghanistan, made exactly the point that you made this week on CNN. He said that for the sake of keeping 2,500 troops there, you were preventing exactly what we are now seeing. And he argued that that presence was essential. But This leads us to a larger question, and it's this, Chris. In the modern world, among Western powers, the relationships have broken down. This is as a result of a number of things. First of all, the Brexit breach between Europe and Britain has soured relationships. Second, the Trump regime's 4 years in office, when he disparaged NATO, the UN, he fell out with Angela Merkel, he didn't like the French. That has caused a rift, another rift between the US and Europe, Britain and Europe. And of course, because of the Northern Ireland Protocol, this administration of Joe Biden's is hostile to Boris Johnson, who they regard as an ally of Donald Trump. So we are at a moment in history, and we're seeing now in this dreadful mismanagement of the evacuation, the consequences of a divided West and the encouragement it will give to terrorists all over the world, not to mention the Chinese and the Russians.
Absolutely. The Chinese in particular will be looking at this and chuckling and making, via their usual state media outlets, all the points that they've always made about the weaknesses and absurdities of democracy. And that this is what democracy leads to. Ineffectual, shallow, I was about to say leadership, perhaps just absence of leadership, and very poor outcomes. Whatever you think about in principle for democracy, if this is what it leads to, why do we, the Chinese, need to borrow anything or learn any lessons from the West?
Yes.
And they have great global strategic ambitions. The Taliban have been said to be not in the slightest bit worried about conditionality of aid, because one of the economic aspects of Afghanistan is that the state relies almost 100% on foreign aid to run, to pay its salaries, to offer public services, and the rest of it. And when asked, are you worried that a lot of this Western aid is now going to dry up? Their answer is no, because we're going to get it from Russia, from China in particular, but also Islamic-friendly countries like Saudi Arabia is always mentioned. And who knows, they might well be right. They may well find that they get plenty of money and other resources from these countries.
And we also understand that ISIS-K, the group responsible for last night's terrorism, have a flourishing trade in opium.
As do the warlords.
Yes. So we're dealing here with, we're dealing with the breakdown of relationships in the West, and also the election. Boris Johnson's contribution to that House of Commons debate last Wednesday was, to put it mildly, for someone who's a noted after-dinner speaker, pathetic. He did not know what to say, and he looked entirely out of his depth.
Yes, well, he was out of his depth, that's why. There is no occasion now, as we have seen with Boris Johnson, that he can not fail to rise to. He simply doesn't have it in him. And this is one of the interesting differences between him and Tony Blair. Because it's often said by people that know Johnson that he was a huge fan of Tony Blair, not so much of the man, he didn't like him, but he thought as a politician there was much to be emulated there. And in terms of the manipulation of the media, the PR, the nicking the best policies of the other opposition party, because that's something that Blair did continuously, anything that the Tories proposed that he thought, A, sounded halfway reasonable, and more importantly, played well in focus groups, he adopted, he stole. And so Johnson has been at that all of the time. But one of the ways Johnson is not Tony Blair is that he doesn't have Tony Blair's depth. Tony Blair was very, very smart, was very, very geeky. He was, in American parlance, a policy wonk, and worked incredibly hard at the detail of policy. Love him or loathe him, he did have that attribute, which Johnson has failed to copy. And so everything Johnson has touched has turned out to be absolutely wafer thin, with no thought gone in underneath it. From the choice of his cabinet to make sure that none of them challenge him on any of this stuff, as I said, keeping Tugendhat and people like Tugendhat on the back benches is a very important part of his strategy. So I think Johnson is self-aware enough to know he's that lazy. Because that's what I'm describing here, is an intellectual and an actual laziness when it comes to the hard work of government. Because it is a government by slogan, which is fine when things are going well. If all you're managing is PR, and when it comes to Brexit, for example, all of the hard yards that you need to make Brexit work are not being done, hard though they will certainly be, it's all about slogans. So you have Liz Truss, who is the Trade Secretary, making announcements about how this, that, and the other trade deal will be a boost for global Britain. And the most important thing about all of these announcements that you get from Liz Truss, and indeed lots of the other members of the cabinet, Priti Patel comes to mind, it's all about the headline. It's all about the PR. And when you look at the substance beneath it, you can see that nobody has done any serious thinking about what the consequences of this new boost for global Britain is likely to be. The trade deal that they did with Australia is a classic example of that. Other trade deals which have been, again, always in the press release, this tremendous boost for global Britain, have just been replicating the existing deals they had when they were a member of the EU.
Yes.
The latest piece of nonsense to come out of Whitehall has been that in order to boost global Britain, that phrase again, you just see it all the time, is that they're going to abandon the GDPR rules. Now, this is a bit esoteric, but every time you've clicked on a website and you see that that box pops up, this website uses cookies, please accept or reject. Everybody knows a little bit about GDPR. If you work in financial services or anything that uses personal data, GDPR is a big deal. All of your Irish and other listeners will know all about it. And Britain is going to abandon this in order to, the slogan, the headline, the promised reduction in red tape for business post-Brexit. And if you think about it for longer than 2 seconds, you realize that all they're doing is they're imposing more red tape on business. Because anybody that wants to do business with Europe is still going to have to obey GDPR, but now there'll be a new set of British-only rules for data protection. So business is up in arms, but that doesn't matter, because the only thing that they want to do is generate this positive, boosterish nonsense via headlines. It's about media management. It's not about the detail, the hard detail of making policy and making government work. This government just simply isn't up to it.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Will there be, I wonder, political consequences when we bear in mind that Dominic Raab was on holiday and refused to take a call last weekend when this crisis was beginning to emerge and have a real impact, and he didn't come back for 48 hours. The minister who is responsible for Afghanistan is in the House of Lords. It's Lord Ahmed. You may not have known that. He also was on holiday and refused to budge. And Boris Johnson himself was also on holiday. I wonder, I mean, Britain, in that House of Commons debate, Johnson and his government took an awful lot of serious criticism, not just from Tom Tugendhat, but from a number of Tories and Indeed, an intervention from the former Prime Minister Theresa May that pointed to Britain's shame, and really coming from a former Prime Minister, it caused one commentator to say she's a better former Prime Minister than she was a Prime Minister. That may seem a sort of sardonic joke, but the point is, will there be for Britain prides itself in its place in the world and its armed support for its armed forces, and indeed for its people who they are now leaving in Afghanistan.
Yeah, the one ex-general has been on the airwaves this week saying, well, if the army can't hold an airport, make an airport safe in Afghanistan, what on earth are the armed forces there for? You know, if they're that ineffective, they're unable to do something that is relatively straightforward in his language, I have no idea whether it is or not, then questions are being asked. I think an equally or perhaps even more fundamental question should be asked, and hopefully will be, about this so-called special relationship between Britain and the United States. I mean, it's always been a fiction. It's more in the minds of the British than the Americans. But having once again, and it's happened many times historically, the relationship being shown to be one-sided. I talked earlier on about the worst foreign crisis since Suez. Suez itself was an abject humiliation. Ronald Reagan humiliated Margaret Thatcher over the invasion of Grenada. There are lots of examples in which this so-called special relationship should have been confined, as a phrase, to the dustbin of history. And no doubt Johnson will not do that. But yes, Britain's place in the world is much diminished, and has been diminished by other things, the reduction in foreign aid that took place recently, and Brexit itself, of course. Johnson is not trusted by any of his allies, not least the United States, and that basic trust, let alone admiration of Britain, has disappeared.
Just a final question, Chris, about the fractured relationships in the Western Alliance, upon which NATO depends, indeed, Europe depends very much on some kind of coherent policy. The incoherence of this, when you add together the failure of the Anglo-American relationship, the failure, the logistical failure, which is incredible, of this operation that we are witnessing, and so anguishing for people to watch people in a sewer waiting desperately to get into an airport, the British and Americans leaving town, those people in that sewer being attacked with a terrorist bomb, and 70-something of them, including women and children, dying. This is a moment that, in my view, reveals something terrible about the two leaders concerned, that is, Johnson and Biden.
It reveals all of the weaknesses in the West, and I think it will lead the West's enemies to ask a very simple question. What is the West for? What does it stand for? What are its values? And we don't even know what they are anymore. And even if they do exist, and I'm beginning to have my doubts, are they able or willing even to defend them? And the series of answers you give to this would lead to very bleak conclusions.
Okay, just a final observation. The best reporting I've seen on this matter from Afghanistan, from Kabul Airport, in fact, has been on Sky Television, and Sky's foreign correspondent, Stuart Ramsey, has been at the forefront of this. He's done some magnificent work in the past 10 days. On the orders of the British Ministry of Defence, Sky have had Stuart Ramsey removed this morning. What does that
tell us? That's very mysterious. I obviously don't know why that is the case. One might presume that it's for his personal safety. There might be some specific concerns about him. I don't believe they've removed all journalists. Perhaps it's the start of telling all journalists to leave. Perhaps there was a specific threat. Perhaps, as you say, if one is more conspiratorially minded, there was something about his reporting that the Ministry of Defence didn't like. I don't know.
Britain diminished?
Very much so. Absolutely.
Okay, Chris, we're very grateful to you for joining us from London. Take care of yourself. And we're grateful, of course, to Chris always. He's one of our most popular contributors. We're grateful to all of you for listening. And indeed, for the contacts you've made with us here, we're a small team. We read everything that comes in, and we're very moved when people take the trouble to write, even if that communication contains criticism. That's part of the job. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.